Well. Welcome back to a new episode of Lo-Fi Lit. This is a podcast where I, Tyler Byrne, host a variety of publishers, authors, and poets. Today on the show, I'm talking to Rudy Johnson. Rudy has a new book out with Pig Roast Publishing. The book is called Kill Rudy Johnson. It is by Rudy Johnson. It is a book of poems. Rudy Johnson is one of the editors over at Misery Tourism, along with his friend Will Duria. What was Will's like major contribution to the book?
Okay, so the main conceit of the book, or one of the main conceits of the book, and it took a long discussion between me and Will to actually figure this out, to figure out how we were going to put this, basically. But there's a game called Daikatana, and it was designed in like the 90s, like mid-90s, by John Romero, who's basically more commonly known as the person who made Doom. And John Romero's Daikatana is basically, it's regarded as one of the like goofiest, it is considered a failure, like critically, but it's a game that was like in this development cycle, like a development hell type situation. And a lot of it was because of the dysfunctional nature of like how the company that put it out was structured, Ion Storm. Like, you know, there are all kinds of rumors, like people doing coke and shit in the studio. And like one of the guys on the team spent $30,000 of the team's money to buy a fucking BMW.
Oh, wow.
But Daikatana is known, it's pretty much like understood to be like John Romero's kind of, not like his baby, because I mean, he made Doom, but like, it's a game that was really important to him, and it was kind of a scattered, weird release. And, you know, it's a game that also he wound up giving the source code to the community to like,
yeah, I saw that. I thought that was fucking awesome. And like, right? there's this argument that like more games should like do that kind of shit.
I think everything should do that.
Yeah.
But the reason Daikatana is important is, you know, Daikatana, like, I feel is like that kind of weird sporadic development cycle, and the things that comes with that, I guess, are kind of important to me, because I feel like this project is kind of similar. Not in that it was like rushed or like, you know, it wasn't like fucked up, you know, or anything like that really in that way. But it's a project, I think, and it's never going to be complete. Because it's something that's never, it's important to me in a way that's like personal, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it's called, you know, Kill Rudy Johnson. It's got my name on it. But it's important in a way that like, that is difficult to satisfy, I think, through the normal type of release a book and do that. And by that, what I mean is like, it's got like this digital component. That probably not a lot of people are going to engage with. And it's got like, I mean, I'm not going to speculate, but it's got a bunch of disparate elements that I'm trying to wrangle, I guess. And, you know, there was some like controversy between me and Will, I guess, or some, you know, we went back and forth on the digital elements a lot.
Why was it what do you mean controversy?
It was just like we had like a little tiff over how the digital elements like fit in with the rest of it, because
what was his thoughts on it?
Well, Will's thoughts, I think, were that basically the poetry element is very strong, and the other elements are kind of disparate. And I was like, and I agreed. I was like, yeah, you know, that's true. It's really, but I think that kind of wrangling all those disparate elements is part of the work, right? That's kind of the whole thing. And it's a situation where a lot of the digital elements are kind of evolving. Like, so like there's still like there's stuff in the book, like there's a couple of QR codes and a marker in the book where like if you scan the marker, like there is additional stuff that, you know, I can upload to it like at any time, basically. It changes sort of. And that's one element that kind of makes it weird, and the QR codes make it weird because you like you have to scan them, and it takes you to this little program, and like you get to basically explore around kind of the kind of like the digital part of my mind, I guess, like a digital brain, I guess is what, you know, I don't want to try to, I'm not trying to talk it up or anything. I'm just saying like, that's like the nature of it is kind of something that is disparate from the poetry and kind of dissonant from like that element of it. It's not something that fits neatly together. And that is why, you know, the Daikatana thing, like William, you know, said, well, you should build that. You should build something into the book that references, it points back to that. Build something into the physical book. And I don't know how much you got through the book, but basically there's all this stuff in there, like referencing kind of the development cycle of the game. There's like a change log in the beginning, like the first page, I think, is a change log.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah. And like, so that's like all, that's basically the whole like 2 year like process of putting together the book. I like talk about some of the stuff I did in there. And also there's like these little notes, if you read through the book, that reference the fact that it is kind of a, you know, hot ghetto mess of just like stuff thrown together. Like, right. I mean, not,
it seems it seems very elaborate and layered though. It doesn't seem like just, it was thrown together.
Well, it's not, I mean, by thrown together, I mean, it's definitely like, it's disparate, right? There's a lot of disparate parts, and like, it's not, it wasn't thrown together like haphazardly.
I mean, you've been working on this thing like for a few, I mean, you've been writing poetry, like you, the Misery Loves Company people, the thing that happened every Friday was like a live reading. Like you would just start writing poems, and like every week you would show up and like have a new poem.
Yeah, that, and a lot of these are from that period. They're like a lot, most I read at Misery Loves Company. You probably know a lot of them already because you were at a lot of those. But yeah, so like when I say disparate, like the elements are all like, they're weird in a way, and they're fit together in a way that doesn't, you know, it's not gonna make anybody's life easier to read it, I guess, but also not, that don't fit into an arc, a neat arc type structure. And that's one thing that Will and I kind of clashed on, because William said, you know, well, you should make it kind of like, you know, he's like basically, is my, he said, is my role as an editor is to try to fit it together into something that kind of arcs or kind of has like a, you know, thing. And we kind of went back and forth on that, and I'm glad we did, because that I think made the final thing stronger. You know, the edit before this final one didn't have any of this, like the editor's notes and the weird, like, break. And I won't spoil the break. Like, there's like kind of a schizoid break towards the end of the book. And I won't spoil that for anybody who wants to, you know, get it still or whatever. But no, like, that edit definitely solidified what this was, because what this is, I think, is basically kind of like an unfinishable work, an unsealed type of unfinishable type of part of me. So yeah, that's what's going on with that. So Will was really kind of instrumental in that.
At what point did you decide that you're going to create a book or put everything into a book?
I guess it was probably like 2024, I guess. Jeff from Pig Roast, you know, actually asked me to, he said, hey, I want to work from you. I want something from you, basically. And it's definitely a weird, like, hodgepodge of a lot of the things I do, with fiction and, well, you know, writing in general, plus the digital stuff.
Did he ever disagree with any of the edits that were made?
No, Jeff was really, really supportive, the whole way through. When it came to the name, like, we had a couple of iterations, and you can actually see those in the page, on the top of the page there.
Yeah, like some of them are marked out.
Yeah, they're crossed out because those are the ones we didn't use. And first one, which I suggested, was Game Loop. And that, you know, like Game Loop is basically like a concept that you probably know. It's like basically like, you know, it's a hook that hooks you into the game and like how people experience games, how they play through them. And then like that cycles again and makes you replay it or makes you do whatever. But then there's like Space Invader, which was Jeff's suggestion. I really like that suggestion, honestly. I really liked that. And you know, that was basically like Space Invaders is the video game, but this one was Space Invader, and it was like kind of a reference to how, like, you know, a lot of these are trying to kind of make people uncomfortable or get people, you know, I don't want to say out of their comfort zone. I mean, most are just trying to make people uncomfortable. I mean, but the final one, Kill Rudy Johnson, came about later. And Jeff was kind of a little bit trepidatious about that one. He was like,
Why?
well, I don't know. Like, he said, you know, I mean, we both like Space Invader a lot. And also, like, Kill Rudy Johnson, like, he wasn't sure, like, about Amazon, like, their policies and shit, if they would
Oh.
fuck around with it. So that was one thing. And he went, but he said, you know, eventually he just said, yeah, do what you think is good. He said, do whatever you want to do. And he said, I want you to be happy with it. And that was his whole thing throughout the whole process, is like, you know, hey, I want you to be happy. And, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. You gotta make something that is interesting to you, and it's gonna make you do it. So, you know,
Did you
yeah.
ever consider doing like the art on the front of the book like a video game?
You know, with Space Invader, we considered something like that. We were gonna have, I think, like some kind of like colonial type of thing, like with people, like the, you know, like Columbus or whatever, invading like the indigenous people, and, you know, doing something like that. Like, but it was structured like Space Invaders, like the game. I don't know. We were gonna do something like that when it was Space Invader. But no, like the front cover will help me with the concept for it. And I really like it because it's basically like a prompt, a DOS prompt of like all my woes, pretty much. And like kind of like a little DOS prompt of my brain and like my whatever. So,
Like, how did you implement the technological shit?
the tech stuff, there's a program that you use to design games. It's called Construct 3, and I want to shout it out. Because it's a really good tool for anybody, even people who don't have like serious technical knowledge. You know, I'm not a programmer by profession or anything like that. And I don't have a huge amount of knowledge there, you know, like about different programming languages and stuff like this. But this one is basically like, it's really cool because it uses like visual elements to kind of help you program and help you do like, you know, basic programming, implement basic programming stuff like variables and stuff. You can do just by like this little drag and drop kind of thing where you drag stuff around on the screen, and like you can make stuff move, and you can, it's a really cool program. But outside of the construct, I use that for the visual elements because it's really, really good at doing like WebGL and like graphics stuff, because it's really like you can see your results instantly. You can preview your results pretty much like just by dragging onto a canvas. But the rest of it is basically like JavaScript. There's some stuff in there that's like just custom JavaScript that I put together for it. And Mulane actually helped with a
Where's
lot.
Mulane been?
I don't know. I don't know. I think Mulane got a job, so Mulane working. But Mulane helped me like test a lot of the stuff. So shout out to Mulane. Like after I finished, I give it to Mulane, and she basically like ran it through kind of some of the paces, like, and help, most of all, like, help test it on other devices, because I don't have no Apple shit or whatever at my house. So
You don't?
I know I don't have I only have Android, so I was just like doing it on that. The whole thing with the program is you scan a QR code, so it's mostly like going to be a mobile type of deal. So what I need to do is test it on Apple devices and test it on, you know, tablets and that stuff, which I don't have. And Mulane was able to help me fix some of the errors and do a lot of the other stuff there, so it was cool. But no, the tech, yeah.
Would you ever do like a Cuphead video game with one of these little racist caricatures?
You know, I don't have the artistic talent for that. I wish, if I did, yes, I would only draw racist caricatures and that kind of shit.
And
That's
have their
literally
own
all.
little universe.
Exactly. No, Cuphead, I really like. That's, you know, I said I don't like platformers, I don't like, but that one is like, that's one of those like brutally like Super Meat Boy type of like brutalizer games, and I can appreciate those games, I guess, just because I'm kind of a masochistic person, I guess. But yeah, I can appreciate
I try to play the first level of that and I fucking lost and like I'm like, this
that.
game's not fun.
It's a brutally difficult game. Like I've
Yeah.
never, I don't like you know, I don't really like artificial like difficulty that feels artificial. It's like, oh, this is brutal. Like, you know, a lot of the games in the collection are like Sonic the Hedgehog games and that shit, which were literally just brutalization for brutalization's sake. Like,
Wait, what do you mean by that?
so like these games, they were basically really poorly designed, like infamously, like poor, not I wouldn't say poorly, but weirdly designed. Like, In other words, like Yuji Naka is getting some kind of sexual sadist shit off of like you going backwards into a spike or something. Like, you know, just shit like that. Like, you know, in the book I talk about how like there is like, you know, like you'll keep the game, the whole purpose of Sonic the Hedgehog is you're moving fast and you're running, and you don't stop, right? But there's this one part, this one level, I think it's in Sonic 2, and like you have to run and jump, because if you don't jump, there's like a spring, and a spring will bump you backwards and you'll go backwards. So I'm like, why the fuck is that there? And there's one part that actually has it, so like if you go backwards, you actually go down another ramp into a spike or something. It's like, this is just like weird, like sexual, like sadist shit. Like, why would you put that in a game where you're supposed to go fast and run around?
So
like, it doesn't feel good. Like,
that makes sense, because in another like Sonic the Adventure game, like they had the big cat or whatever. I'm like, what the fuck is that character about? It was the most obnoxious fucking level, and I could never get the fucking frog, and like, it's so irritating.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of fishing, like you're talking about fishing in Fortnite. Wasn't there a Big the Cat fishing?
Yeah, Big game? The Cat fishing
level. Oh, okay. Oh, okay, it was a level. Okay, see, I've never played Sonic Adventure because I refuse to play any 3D Sonic, because that to me is heresy. A 3D, three-dimensional Sonic.
See, I never played the original Sonic games, but when that Adventure game came out, I bought it and I got it and I loved it. But then I tried to go back and play it and it looks like total shit. And nothing like I remember at all. I remember it being like very expansive and like you could go anywhere. And then like when I tried to play it a few years ago, it was like the most tiny little map ever. I'm like, this is nothing like I remember.
Oh man, yeah, it's like, a lot of these games haven't aged well. Like I know.
No. And it's so weird to go back and play and like your memories are fucked. But it's like
just bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one kind of component of this collection, like some of the details about the games and stuff. Like I don't even remember if some of these details are right, because I played these games in the 90s, or like some, you know, some of them like I played maybe like once or twice, right? So so a lot of it is like this weird like space between memory and like, I guess, like, you know, it depends on like memory and memoir, I guess. So that's part of memoir too, I guess. And I guess that might be the, if there is one, like the auto fictional type element, it's like, yeah, you fudge it a little bit for like what you're trying to say about the experience, you know. It's not, but the game I think is an experience, is part, a big part of the experience there are too, you know. Games construct like these kind of like liminal spaces, I guess, where like around the game, you know, like, and that's a big part of memory, how memory works, and how like, you know, you form attachments to these games because they construct like all this kind of mythology around the game, you know, I guess. And also they construct like, you know, these literal memories of you and your friends playing it. That's another big part of the collection. I was like, well, yeah, this is me and my buddies, these were good or bad times, but they're all structured around the game, you know. Man, yeah.
So I like the poem, The Punch Hole Universe. It seemed like kind of an origin story, a little bit.
Yeah, so that one is one of my favorites, too, just because it kind of merges, like, reality and, you know, my reality of being really depressed and being really fucked up most of the time and punching holes in my walls and doing all
but it doesn't things. It's very grounded, and like sometimes you'll go off on something, but then you like you go back and ground yourself again, and I appreciate that, because sometimes people write a poem, they'll ground themselves but then go off and keep going off and off and off more and more, and I kind of lose it as a reader, and I you seem to ground yourself, and I appreciate that part.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of that in a lot of these too, like going off and never coming back. But the punch hole, you know, like a lot of those are the experiences I talk about, and they're like real stuff, like the little cardboard box town or whatever.
Yeah.
And, the thing with the state trooper actually is something that actually happened to me. Like, and, you know, where, and as you said those words too, it was like this Border Patrol guy. He came up in my car. I was on the bridge. He's like, what are you doing here? He's like, this is the bridge where people kill themselves, boy. Like, don't you know? I was like, yeah, I know. and he was like, well, you know, yeah, like one time, like, because I was thinking about, I went up there and I was pissed off or something and just having to really going through it, I guess. And I was ready.
Were you going to kill yourself?
I was going to jump off of that bridge. And, you know, I was, but I wasn't. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those, you know, who knows? But
you wanted to be out there and, like, feel that.
I wanted it to feel that. Exactly. Yes. That's exactly it. And this this Border Patrol agent came to my car and tapped on the window. He's like, "Hey," he's like, "Are you all right?" I was like, "Well, whatever, you know." And but he said, you know, somebody said, he said, "Well, I'm glad I caught you there," because he said, "One time I came back, you know, I came and I saw somebody in a car on the bridge, and I came back and there was nobody in the car." And that's what created that line, that, you know, ghost car or whatever. It's like, who was in the car? Was it just a ghost or whatever? But I guess they had jumped off the bridge, you know. That was the thing. Like, he saw somebody, you know, kill himself, and that was you know, that. So yeah, I mean, that poem is just like, or it's basically just about a bunch of bad feelings, but you know, I kind of rooted it in that fantasy element too.
The part I wasn't even expecting is, like, there's a part where, like, there's a, I guess there's an empty lot, but then after that there's like a college or something, and then there's like graduate students.
Yeah.
What, can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, like, so they're basically like, the universe I depict in there is like one of my little kind of conjured campaign settings or whatever. It's like a universe that's pretty much like worse than this one. You know, with Melkrin, which is the setting, you know, I try to, one of my goals for this setting is like, I guess, kind of reverse, like, utopia, not a dystopia exactly, because it's not political. It's just like, hey, let's make this as shitty as, let's make this shittier than my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, basically that's what is the, that's what the universe is. The punch hole universe is like, you know, you punch a hole through the wall and then you see another universe. And that's what happened, is like, that building,
I love
pretty
that.
Much. Oh yeah. Yeah. Thanks. No, but that building was basically like where they were studying it, those students. And so they showed up because they realized, oh, there's something here. And then that spills over into our world, you know, and that's kind of what I feel like with depression and that kind of stuff. That's, I thought, like, a decent metaphor for that is like, hey, like, you know, all this stuff that's in your head, that's like, you know, it spills onto, into real life, and even whether it's true or not, you know, whether it's reality or not, you know, it spills into your real environment, because it's the stuff in your head or the stuff that you're going through, it just kind of, it comes into real life one way or the other. And that's kind of what it's about.
Because in the poem, I thought it was like the narrator was like homeless in his car, and then like there's an empty lot, and then a college got built, and then he was annoyed that there are all these people parking there now.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. That's true.
That's hilarious.
The reason, yeah, but the reason they were there is to study, I guess, this, you know, they're physics students studying this other universe, and it's like, oh yeah, and then, but then the other universe, like, stuff starts coming through from it, and then there's like a war because, like, the people, like the fascists from the other universe, like, come through and start doing stuff. And
that's like super fucking experimental and creative. Do you think, like, if you hadn't started writing every week at Mercury Loves Company, that you couldn't have, like, produced a poem like that? Like, would it, or do you think it, like, helped your creativity?
No, Misery Loves Company was great, and you know, like, there's, it's like a real laboratory for anything you want, basically. And that was, you know, why, you know, we were really blessed to have, like, just, you know, just have experienced that. I think everybody who was involved there, and William, you know, and, you know, me, and whoever, and everybody who came to the things, so obviously, like, it was a community built around it.
Oh yeah,
and doing poetry shit.
So you gotta ask, is it ever coming back?
I don't know.
Is it dead?
I don't want to say dead, but
can you just say dead so we can, like, it's never coming back? Just like as a finite answer.
No, I can't give a finite answer. I can't. I don't.
Because it's almost like worse, because it's like suffering. The yeah, fact that it could come back, there's a possibility, and because it's like, sometimes, like, on a Friday night, I'm just like, fuck, I wish I had something to do.
Right. No, like, I agree.
You want to be, because the thing about Misery Loves Company is, like, I could just pop in if I wanted to. There's no, like, expectations of coming in.
Exactly.
It was just there, and it's like, oh, I wish, it was so nice just to have that.
It was nice. I will say that, but I won't give any finite
Why is it always a mystery? It's always a mystery of Will.
It's got to be a mystery,
I guess.
It's
been a year now.
It's building the mystery.
Any positive. So is Will just like on a farm hanging out?
Well, he's at his house, you know, hanging out. I don't know. Like,
but he's doing better.
Yeah, he's doing good. Yeah, I just saw him last week. So, yep.
What did you talk about?
Charles Manson, I think.
Charles Manson?
There's his cousin's up, and we talked about this documentary. I think it was about Charles Manson.
Did you talk about the book sales? Yeah, like how many book sales you get?
We don't really. You know, I gave his cousin a copy of my book. You know, obviously Will has his copy. I don't know really much about. I haven't done the deep dive into the sales. I don't really give a shit. I want Jeff to get paid, so I want
to. You're here to make money, Rudy.
I mean, am I? That's what they say, I guess. But you know, I want to at least make Jeff back what he spent on the book. So you know, I don't really care.
What did he spend on it?
I honestly don't know. That's not. I'm not super privy to it. I know it was a good process all around. Like Jeff and Pigros did me really good, really solid. Shit. So I wanna try to give back here a little bit if I can. So, but it was fun. It was a fun experience, definitely. I do not regret any part of it.
What poets did you read?
What poets that for specifically this book or what? Just yeah. Who I read
or inspire you? I guess probably contemporary ones.
Mostly contemporary. I mean, obviously, like you know, like Jan and you know those like they do a lot of. There's a lot of overlap between like internet stuff and like that's a but Kat, you know, has a lot of poetry that I really, really like. Thumbsucker, which I think I held it up at the reading there, but like there's a poem about the Last of Us TV show in there actually that inspired directly one of the ones I read at that reading. Mm-hmm. And but no, I like Kat's poetry. I like you know, a lot of the stuff on Do Not Submit is really, really solid fucking shit. And like I know they kind of slowed down and throttled back like doing stuff now, but like almost everything on there is good. Like I read almost everything on there every day. Like people put shit up and like I read all that's very rare. I never like the other outlets since like Hobart and those guys. Like, I very rarely read.
You could get on Hobart now.
Oh, I don't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just
have you sent them anything?
I've never sent them anything because I don't read a huge amount. I remember there was one poem I really liked on there, like a couple of years ago.
I mean, Gigi got on there. You could get on there.
No, I mean, I don't, you know, it's not, for me, it's not like a contest or anything. I'm not trying to shit on Hobart, but I want to read an outlet that, yeah, if I submit to him, I want to, like, actually be involved and, like, read all this stuff. And I can't really say that for Hobart. But don't submit, I do read heavily. Apocalypse Confidential, I read heavily, too. So those guys are big inspirations. But, yeah. No, it's funny, I just, speaking of poetry communities, I just went to a local community, local to Malone.
In Malone? Oh, nice.
It was an in-person reading, and me and my buddy went up there, Vito and I went up there. Oh.
How'd that go?
Yeah, it was actually pretty good. You know, I read a poem from the book. I read The Wheel of Time, and I read there before. I read twice there before, and they're actually really supportive. I was surprised how, like, supportive the local scene or whatever. My neighbor even came and read. Like, it was, like, just seeing people, like, I know in the community, like, hey, what's up?
Wait, your neighbor's a poet?
Yeah, well, his daughter, who's, I mean, she used to be my neighbor, too, but, you know, she writes, like, poetry and stuff, and, you know, like, this is a place that's, like, 5 minutes away from my house, like, it's in some, like, cellar, basically, like.
But and, you say she writes poetry, now, what kind of poetry is she writing? It's probably differently from yours.
It's different from mine, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But, you know, most of the stuff there but it's actually pretty, like, diverse as far as styles there. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody last night, I think the artist's name was Rifka, gave, like, this weird interactive presentation that was really neat. There's people there that do, like, you know, like, Adirondack-flavored, like, poetry and stuff, like, about either, like, the local scene. A lot of nature stuff is big. A lot of, you know, older people, you know, they do a lot of nature stuff too, which is not.
I hate that shit.
You know, like the Whitman stuff. I don't, you know, it's not my favorite, but like, I feel like it's cool. Like that they, you know, they do that and like they accept the fact that I do different stuff.
Yeah.
The acceptance is really cool. And I think that's something that even if they're not writing something that, you know, even if people aren't writing the same way, like you gotta, like, that's where the community aspect comes in, where it's like, oh, you can accept anybody. So, I mean, I read like this, I read The Wheel of Time, which is one of the, like, not one of the, like, hardest ones in there, like, but it's kind of like transgressive, I guess, if you want to call it that. And like they everybody applauded and they're like, oh yeah, cool. Like, you know, and some people came up to me and said, oh hey, that was really neat. And you know, I felt, you know, they felt something from it. And like some of the stuff there, like I can feel like some shit there. You know, I can definitely feel it. Like, you know, there was somebody that read a poem about like divorce where they kind of compared it to like a process, a natural process of erosion, sort of. And I thought that was cool. So I mean, it's there's a lot of cool stuff there.
And so did you sell any books?
No, I actually gave them two on consignment or whatever. Like, I guess. But and you know,
what does that mean?
They take them and they take a cut, and then if they sell it, you know, they take a cut.
So wait, you gave people books to sell, and then you take a cut of what they sell your book for?
Yeah, they take a very small cut. It's like 85-15 or something. So I would get 85%. They get 15 for their
consignment. You gave it to other poets to sell the
No, no, it's the outlet. The outlet is called the Downtown Art Center.
Okay.
And they basically sell it. And the proprietor there, Jenna, is pretty cool. And you know, she has it in this little room in the back, and like at events they'll wheel out this big like this cart of books and they'll sell some of them. Yeah.
Do you promote yourself as a black writer?
No. Well, I mean, some of my poems use the word niggas or nigger. Yeah. So yeah, I mean I guess that's one way to promote myself as a black writer, I guess. I think I was the only black person there. I'm not sure though. I think I was.
So like what drew you to poetry and not say like fiction or nonfiction?
Well, I don't read a lot of fiction. Nonfiction is fine. I read nonfiction most of the time. I read pretty slow, so energy is expended on pretty much anything. But with fiction, I guess you have to buy into the conceit of it, you know, of the work, I guess. And that's a little harder for me to do, I guess, sometimes. And a lot of fiction, I think, I don't want to say it's trying to be clever, but it's trying to be like either authentic, it's trying to be something, right? It's either trying to make a statement or be authentic or be something in a way that I feel like poetry is just kind of not, like, right? Because people, I think, have kind of accepted that poetry is just kind of like freebie type of, like, free-for-all type of
shit.
Do
anything you fucking want to, yeah.
You can do whatever you want, and there's that expectation. Like, that's just like kind of a meta thing, I guess, but there's that expectation that it's just kind of, it's very indulgent, right? And that's one thing, reason, you know, I decided like this is a memoir thing. Like, for it has to be poetry, right? It's got to be that, because it's about me, and it's about, there's no illusion to like profundity or any sort of profound, like revelatory stuff here. It's just like, it's basically just, you know, I called it like a mental health narrative, right? I mean, it's like, a slave, like the slave narrative is a slave narrative, right? You know, and if there is a narrative, it's something similar to that, where it's like, you know, yeah, this is just what happened. Like, you can make whatever sense of it. And I know a lot of slave narratives were used politically, and that's a tongue-in-cheek type of thing I'm saying. But, you know, as a form, like, you know, I don't... To tell you the absolute God's honest truth, I'd rather be making video games, like, honestly, like, than even writing poetry. And I think that shows in the collection. I think that pretty much shows, especially with the digital elements being what they are. But
there's no like resentment in the writing where you're like, I hate writing poetry. Like, you clearly love the aspect of it. And like every poem, it kind of changes in form, it seems like.
Yeah.
There's a variety where some books there's no variety and they just keep the same form.
Yeah, that may be true. I think that is true. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of like there's huge jumps between what each poem is trying to do, I guess, or accomplish, if anything. There's also huge jumps as far as like topics, you know, what the, you know, and feel, I guess, you know.
And then you have the choose your own adventure thing where it's like, if you related to this line, go to this page.
Yeah.
I love that part too. I've never seen that. That's like, because you took like the maybe, I don't know if the best line or like, I guess just the universe poem. Mm-hmm. Two of the lines that like hit me, I see you have like, if you like this line or like feel like this, go to this page. If you like feel like this, go to this other page. I was like, those are two lines that hit me. Like, that's really cool.
Cool. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay, cool. I'm glad those lined up with Yeah, basically, I tried to take some of the like stronger line. I don't know if it's like stronger or weaker, but basically, like there were two lines that hit me. You know, that's so I'm glad you were hit in the same way by those two particular ones. Like, yeah, you know, sort of, and then that kind of leads in because what that is basically it creates a framework for the next poem you read, right? It creates like a mental framework. It's like, oh, I went there because I navigated, you know, seeing this line. You know that I experienced this way or whatever, and that's what the choose your own adventure thing is to do. It's not, you know, like most choose your own adventure where it's like this is just a mechanic to, or, you know, this is literally a mechanic to go to get to the next narrative, right?
Yeah,
There's no narrative. You, yeah.
I used to read those books as a kid, and like I would get excited about the concept of it, and then I would read it,
Yeah.
and it would always be like really shitty, and I like, what the fuck
Yeah.
did I read that for? It was like
Yeah.
it wasn't imaginative enough.
No, that was kind of I never really got heavy into the choose your own adventure. I know there's Goosebumps and shit as
Yeah.
a kid. I kind of liked those and yeah, but I didn't read much of it. I didn't read much as a kid, honestly. I was kind of turned off by reading unreading by school actually. So,
I bet,
but
yeah.
most of the stuff I mean that's how a lot of people are I guess. But
Yeah.
most of the stuff that was available to read, I you know I just didn't like. So it was like,
That's
well, I
why I
don't.
got into comic books and what led me to like reading a lot of graphic novels as a teenager.
The interesting that's the interesting thing that I don't, you know, I've never been into comic. I'm still not into comic books really at all, or graphic novels. And one thing I really don't like about a lot of comics is the amount of text, just the denseness and the denseness of the text. It's actually like worse than many books for me. Like trying to read the text and process like the images and stuff too. Like I really like Jeff sent me this book called Freak Buck. It's one of the Pigros books, and that book I really love because it doesn't like it uses the way it uses text is actually really good, and because it doesn't try to overload you with all this bullshit, it's more like just like it's almost feels like incidental. The text feels incidental to the images, which I think is the best way to do a comic book.
Yeah, there's like a whole argument out there, like, and I've seen this one Marvel comic did this where like they purposefully took out the text and you could only rely on the art. And that was like one of the better comics I had read from Marvel. And like, there's people that like indie comic book, like industry, I don't know of industry, but like the scene, they some people don't use text. They just use the image. And it makes for, it's very, it can be like haunting and it can be like still life. And it's like, it's just really cool how that process works, like, and how it affects the brain and people's, my response to it and stuff.
Yeah, no, I really like books that are pure. Like if you're talking about comic books, like
Yeah.
pure just image stuff, because there are some of those spreads in Marvel, like especially from the 70s and shit, or even
Oh
like
God, we're terrible. I got a CD that was like, it was like all this Spider-Man issues from like 1 to 500, and I went back and I tried to read like the first like year or something. It was God dog shit awful crap. And it made me really re-examine my fanship with Spider-Man. But like
Oh no, yeah.
these fucking comic books are just terrible.
No, like there's, you know, there's a DC comic book, I think it's Transmetropolitan, the Spyro Jerusalem one. And like there's this awesome, like it's like a panel spread where it's like the way the panel is broken is like super fucking awesome. And then like there's all this text and shit like everywhere. Like they put the text in there. It's like because it's all this explanatory shit. It's
It
like he's
ruins
having
it,
a
yeah.
monologue and it fucks it up. I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? Why not just put that on another page? Like, I don't, and that for me is like a big experience. Like I had some comic books as a kid. You know, I have like Nightfall, I think is one that I have, and that's a Batman one where Bane breaks his back or whatever the fuck. I remember reading it and going through the thing, and like the cover was fucking awesome. It was like one of those covers. It's got like where you can feel it, like it's raised kind of. And you know, I turned to like towards some of the last pages in it, and the paneling is really great. But then I remember having to read through all the text, and I'm like,
Hold
wow,
up. Yeah.
this is dog shit. Like even as a kid, I was like, this feels really stupid. Like people wouldn't say this shit. Like, you know, or like, you know, like what's being explained here, like I just don't care about. Like, why aren't you telling me, like, aren't you giving me like gritty like details about what it feels like when he's breaking his back or something like that? You know, it's not, it's just like, you know, and you know, I don't know. I'm not like a comic book artist or writer or anything like that, so I don't know how they do it. But I don't really want to criticize it too heavily, but just on a visceral level, I really get turned off by, you know, big explanatory text and like huge dialogue panels where it's like this guy is saying this thing. I understand like the villain monologue and stuff, and that some of that is funny, but like something like even for graphic novels like Watchmen, I tried to read and I was like, no. You know, I tried a couple of those and I was like, oh, you know what? This doesn't really say anything. It doesn't feel visceral or anything to me. So I'm like, whatever.
Yeah. Like, and I would take that and try to like look at it through like writing on the page. And it's like, the less you do is better. And like,
yes.
That's why like genre fiction sometimes would turn me off. It like turns me off because they over explain shit.
Yeah, exactly. That's why when for my genre stuff, like my superhero stuff, I try to keep it to like one page, like a total one page, and that's
it. Do you have a genre?
Huh?
Do you have genre stuff?
Well, yeah, superhero stuff. I mean, that's the, you know, like the, like, I don't know if you've heard any Lifesaver stories. Lifesaver is this villain who basically, whenever somebody has an abortion, like she has an energy sword, and it gets bigger whenever there's abortion. And because she's like a conservative Christian. So, but yeah, like, so
wait, her like, sword gets bigger when there's an abortion.
Yeah. Because she wants to end abortion. So it's like the sword of life or whatever. It's a lifesaver. That's all. But no, like, so like, when I do those, like I pretty much try to keep the thing like total of one page. And I like it if it's like half a page, right?
So it's like flash fiction.
Exactly. That's what it is. It's all superhero flash. And I'm like, yeah, because that's all I would read. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to write something that's longer than what I read.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the same with these poems in this book. You know, I don't want to write a poem that I wouldn't read. You know what I mean? Like, or that's written in a way that I wouldn't read it. And that's one thing when Will and I went through and, you know, kind of decided on what was here, like what was going to be in here. Like, we really went harsh on like poems that felt too like, you know, like poems, all the poems about poetry writing and stuff like that, stuff that didn't feel right for like the viscerality of it, I guess if that's a word. I didn't feel right for the visceral nature of like how the collection should feel. Like, you know, Will said like, hey, it should be like a punch in the face. And there were a lot of poems, even ones that I liked, but then when I considered it under that lens, like I was like, oh yeah, actually that isn't really like a punch. That's more like, you know, that's more a, you know, we had this conversation and talk about fighting games again, not to do too much of a detour, but like, so like there's this fighting game called Blaze Blue. I'm sure you've probably seen it. No. It's one of the Arc System Works ones. They make all these weird Japanese fighters. But anyway, I remember playing that and Guilty Gear. I think this was actually from Guilty Gear, actually. I'm sorry. But it was, I was playing it with Will and he was like, well, like the reason I can't get into this is because when, like when I do a punch, like the things, the command says heavy punch. Like I do a heavy punch and the guy, you know, like the guy like reaches to his side and goes like, huh, you know, he doesn't do a punch. He does some other bullshit. That's like Guilty Gear. Like, you know, the guy will like, you know, flourish his bandana or something when you heavy punch. It's like, what the fuck is that? But that's, that conversation actually helped crystallize a lot of the, like the feels level stuff of the collection, because it's like, you know, if you throw a punch, it should be a punch, right? And it should be something that feels visceral and it should feel like you connect with something. And that a lot of, so that's kind of the ethos we had for a lot of the poems in here, is like, well, you're like, what is gonna hit people first, right? What hits them first? And that's what we wound up going with for a lot of these.
Why doesn't he record like a conversation with you about the process of editing this book and like what you guys decided for and against, because I feel like that would do well.
I mean, yeah, we should. I wish we had recorded the De Katana conversation. It was kind of a long, rambly one, but we should.
But when he talks to you and is trying to prove a point, does he bring up like references you don't know what he's talking about?
No. Most of the things he referenced were pretty like yeah, it was very clear what he was saying. Like, I just disagreed with a lot of it. But
like,
I mean,
he doesn't like reference like Nabokov or something. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no. I mean, like, no, because he knows that he knows my priors and shit about that. Okay. You know, Nabokov is actually one of the ones I don't like. We can both see eye to eye on there. Same with like Berryman or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, you know, Dostoevsky, like, oh boy, like, no, I like, not only do I not give a shit about Dostoevsky, you know, Demons, actually, I read for Derek's little thing. I was starting to read, you know, his he had like a reading group. Mm-hmm. And Demons actually, you know, kind of hit for me because of the way it feels like our community, right? Some of the the stuff about the revolutionaries and stuff felt like our community. But I think that's kind of incidental, because most Dostoevsky and the Russians, like Tolstoy, you know, like, fuck no, would I read any of that? And so, but Will knows all of that, and he doesn't, like, you know, Will's not like pretentious and like trying to, you know,
no, yeah,
that kind of shit. So basically, like, what we talk about mostly is like how to do a lot of the stuff I was trying to do, like in a better, in a way that he thought would satisfy me more. But I was like, well, actually, that wouldn't really satisfy me more, right? Hmm. You know, and that's where we went back and forth, because he's saying, like, well, if you do this, and like, people aren't gonna like get some of it in the way you want them to get it. But yeah, I think what we wound up discussing and what wound up happening is basically that we figured out a way to do it, to do the book so that basically, like, it doesn't matter. Like, the satisfaction element is inherent in, like, the work, right?
Yeah.
The satisfaction for me, especially, is inherent in, like, you know, it's a good compromise, I think, of things that are, like, for other people and for me in a way, in that very specific way that I wanted, that I was trying to go through. Like, the kind of unifying of the digital elements and the poetry and all the disparate, like, you know, weird kind of elements, you know, he put it together in a way, I think, that was, you know, we managed to tie it together in a way that was satisfying for me. And that's, you know, kind of like tying up loose ends sort of thing. And that really, I think, was good, because, you know, with this collection, I know this isn't going to sell, like, you know, hundreds of copies or, you know, thousands of copies or whatever. This is just, you know, a lot of this is just something that felt like I needed to put it out there. I need to do it. And, you know, I'd like people to interact with it. I'd like people to get it. But, you know, for me, the satisfaction kind of has to be inherent in the work too, right? You know, a lot of it, you know, that's not to say I don't want any, it's totally inaccessible or anything like that. I don't think it is. Even the digital elements, which are something that's unfamiliar to most people, I guess. But I think the satisfaction for me has to come from like just the composition of the text more than anything, like just the act of composition. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one way we were able, like, with Will's help, we were able to basically get it to a point where I think that, you know, just looking at this, like, I have no regrets with it, you know what I mean? Whereas before, I think I would have had some regrets.
Before you were talking to him about editing it?
Yeah, before the last edit, before the De Katana edit, I guess, mm-hmm. You know, but I think, I think we did it good. And I think even though some of the parts are weird and disparate, I'd encourage people to interact with.
But that's like your thing, though, I feel like.
No, it is. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, like, just, like, I've talked to some people who read it and they're like, oh, yeah, I kind of skipped by the QR codes. I'll go back later and see them or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's one way to read it, definitely. And that's kind of intentional how it's built that way. You can skip the choose your own adventure, you can skip the QR codes. But I would encourage people to interact with those because of the way, like, the way it's constructed is not linear, first of all,
why didn't you take images from where the QR codes go and, like, put that in the book?
Well, if you scan the QR codes, you'll see why that is.
Oh, they're too graphic?
Well, no, it's not they're too graphic. It's that, the QR codes, go to a program. They don't go to, like, just the poem. It goes to, like, a computer program, pretty much, for your cell phone or whatever. And the way you interact with that program, I think, is important to the work. Okay. I feel like that the way it's structured is it's structured so that it's important to, like, what the work's trying to communicate, I guess, if anything. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's that, I guess.
But are you trying to, like, surprise people by, like, when they go there or, like, enrich?
No, I don't think it's surprise or even enrichment, really. I think it's just that, like, one of the things I talk about with Will is that this whole thing is, like most autofiction is about, like, the universe of the author or whatever. Mm-hmm. Most, you know, memoir or whatever is, you know, it's about, like, the universe of the author. And to do that for the way I wanted to do it, like, with games and especially online games and, like, all these digital, all of these things, this is about, like, digital stuff, mm-hmm. right? And digital ephemera. So, like, the way I wanted to construct that is to construct it like almost an internet of things, right? You know, like an internet, you know, like, you like you're doing something on the internet and then you browse to another thing. You know, it has to have a hypertext element to it, because there is, like, to me, I think it'd be dishonest and disingenuous to do it any other way, because it wouldn't really speak to that part of what this work is, which is basically a hypertext memoir, pretty much. I mean,
when you were talking to Will, did you ever just say, like, it's my book, I want to do what I want, and that's the end of the conversation?
No, I mean, I try to listen to him because I know he wants the same thing I want. You know, he wants to, any more, he wants to basically make it for that it's, you know, it's satisfying to me. He wants me to be satisfied, just like Jeff and those guys. I never would blow off any of their suggestions, even the ones I didn't really, like, jive with. I'm like, oh, what? I don't know. Like, you know, Will, for the book, said I should, you know, how the book is double spaced. He said, like, well, you should try to single space it, because some of the pagination on the poems, like, will punch more if it's just single space, right?
Yeah.
Like the one he gave as an example is Altered Beast, the one about my dad, where I have the lines and each word is like a different line, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he was right on that, and that's why when we went back to do it, like, I actually paginated that one that way. You know, I single spaced that poem, and but I kept the rest of them double spaced because I think, one, that's easier to read for old boomers and shit. But also I just like the way it looked. And I said, no, you know, that's just, like, aesthetically, I like that more. And it gives the book, like, this kind of weight to it. Like it makes it like a heavy tome. But when you turn it open and, like, look at it, it's not, you know, I feel like it doesn't feel like, it feels like you can skip around, right? And it doesn't feel like heavy in that way when you open it. But, like, the extra page count does, like, give it that evil tone vibe, which I think is kind of important to it, you know, as stupid as that sounds. But, you know, I did try to listen to everything everybody said, you know, take into account everything. I'm not just going to be like, oh, fuck you, it's my book, or be like, yeah, a petulant, like, cocksucker about it, because, you know, like, the aspect of, like, asking your friends, like, why would I ask them if I don't want to, you know, hear that? I'm not trying to, you know, say that, you know, I'm not trying to, like, basically deflect your question or whatever, but I'm saying, like, why would I ask them if, you know, I don't want to take their advice into it? Because I want as many people involved in building this as possible. That's why I asked, you know, Carter for music for the program. I asked Mulane to help with you know, the programming aspects and the testing QA or Q&R stuff. I want people involved in it because I want, you know, I want to get all my friends in on it. You know, that's the whole thing. So all the things that people said, you know, I'm taking it into account. I'm not really going to say, like, fuck you, even if I make the decision that I don't want that in there or whatever.
Do you think the QR code thing, or, like, why people skip over it? Because QR codes have been around for, like, 10 years and people get annoyed by them.
Yeah, no, that I think is definitely a big thing. But I think in the case of what this is, I think it was the best way to do it. Like, I could have put a link in there, I guess. But, like, that, I think, would get even less of a response, I think.
Do you think this book would work, like, on, like, the internet, like a design specifically, like, on a website or something? I don't know.
I think because of a very specific thing, it's not a QR code, it's actually an augmented reality marker. It's on the last page, it's on page 260. And because of that aspect of it and what that is, I think it's actually better as a physical book. And that's why I made it as a physical book. Because that aspect, like, what that does, like, no spoiler, like, if you don't want spoilers, I guess turn it off now or whatever, but I don't think it's a spoiler, but basically, like, what that is, like, you open you have the program open that, you know, I designed, and then you go to that marker on page 260, and you shine there's another program inside of the program. It's kind of like the program is kind of like a full Windows interface. You've probably seen it. But basically, you use that AR code, and it projects onto your screen. Like, it projects, like, it looks like it's in the book, pretty much. Like, if you hold your cell phone up there, like, it looks like what you're reading, like, is in the book, because it moves with the book, like, in your hand and stuff like that. It moves, and it places when you're looking through your cell phone's camera, it actually places the text on the page. So So there's that element of like it being on like part of the book, like part of a physical element of it. It looks like I'm sure you know, like AI, like augmented realities, like Snapchat and stuff like that. Like that's what it does. Like the whole point of that is so that is that you're merging the physical and the digital, which I think is the whole thing about this collection. And that's why like stuff like that is why I think it's probably better as a physical book, because I would not do, like, you know me, like how I do shit. I would not do a physical book just to do it. Like I wouldn't do it just so I can have like dead tree cred or whatever. Like I literally don't care. Like I'd rather not do one actually, but I think for this one, that's what I was thinking, that my thought process on it.
You didn't just do this for respect.
Oh fuck no. what respect? But no, like I think it's important, like the work, like not says something, but like is what, you know, is pointing to what it is, right? You know, like it's the digital work, you know, and like whether or not people you know, interact with that element of it, that's what it is, right? I mean, it's digital, it's a merger of digital and physical stuff in a way that I think has hypertext and like cybertext type elements. So that's,
it feels like you're pushing like forward with this book, like in a way that like people like a graduate student might, if they like went to a university specifically just like study analyze poetry and like create some experimental piece that they couldn't do outside of the real world. Like you, like you're someone that like you have like a shit job and you're like shit live and you're still doing this and like pushing poetry forward.
I don't know if pushing forward is like,
or you're pushing, I mean, it, you're pushing the boundaries of what people might expect.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing Will said about this, I think he kind of said this, but and some people have said this too, like basically it has an installation element to it, like an installation quality, I guess. And that's something that like, yeah, you know, I guess it's kind of, but I wouldn't consider it like pushing any boundary. I don't know, like pushing boundaries. Like, I don't know what the boundaries are to push. Like, you know, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like basically like there's like a bunch of invisible walls there, sort of, you know, like, I like to use a video game term.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of invisible walls and, you know, you hit them and you see what's out there. Right. And I guess, but I think maybe, you know, if it's anything, it's kind of like trying to explore like how you can clip through those walls as opposed to pushing on the boundaries or whatever.
Do you ever have you watched the YouTube video series where like they go outside the map of the video game?
Yes. Yep. That's a good analogy there, honestly. Yeah. And that's actually what I was thinking of. Like when you go in Doom and you type ID clip or you clip through the fucking level and you see all the like weird like things like in Drost effect, like kind of replicated. And like, it's cool. Like, I mean, that, and that's what I think it's doing. Like, it's not like it's outside the boundaries, but I don't think it's necessarily pushing on them because I don't care about pushing on the boundaries. It's just explore. Like, it's more like exploratory. And that's the way I play games too. You know, interestingly enough, I guess that's how I play a lot of video games. I don't care about like the achievement aspects. I'm not an achiever. I'm not really like a killer. I'm more like a socializer, I guess. If you talk about like the Bartle score thing, you know, from MMOs, but. Yeah, I guess a social explorer, I guess that's what, you know, that's how I'd be classified for a MMO game. So, you know, into the guilds, into the, you know, the goofy, like, players hanging out type aspect. And that's, I think, how I see this work, too. And it's kind of just like, yeah, just like whatever, like, however you want to experience it is cool. But you should kind of embrace the confusion, like, I'm not real big on like everything. First of all, I'm not big on like things need to communicate like a statement or whatever. That's fucking dumb. Or like profundity, things should be profound. That's fucking dumb also. But also I'm not big on the idea that like understanding is even key to like experiential stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that like even if you don't understand it, I think this will hit you, right? I mean, even like even the digital elements, like if you don't understand it, it's like, oh, you don't understand it. That's like fine. Like it's not a problem. Like, you know what I mean? It's not, you don't have to, I don't think, and I'm saying this from personal experience, like I don't think understanding is even linked to like a good or like an interesting experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of works that I've read and stuff and that I've seen, you know, that I've absorbed that I don't understand. I don't think I, you know, maybe get the point, or I don't, it doesn't like, but it still hits viscerally, you know what I mean? It still hits me some kind of way. And I think that if people give this a chance, I think it can hit in those ways. You know, you don't like totally grok all the references or grasp all the stuff, or like, you know, even if that understanding isn't there, I think you can still get hit by something. I think in that case, like, let it hit, you know, let yourself get hit. You know, that's, for me, that's what I do with a lot of art I experience, even stuff I don't really get, you know, I don't think I fully grasp it.